We've been joined by two other guests I'd like to introduce. First of all, Vinny Eastwood, calling from New Zealand. Vinny, thank you for joining us.
What up? It's the thunder from down under.
How's things there in New Zealand?
Actually, I'm closer to the blunder from down under. But the weather's actually not that bad right at the moment, so I suppose that's good. But I've been on Facebook all morning trying to spread round the fact that I'm trying to accumulate a large quantity of donations. I need, like, literally thousands of dollars because my wife's van has kind of packed up, and we need to replace that because if she can't go to work, she can't cover her half of the rent, and that means I have to pay for it. So it's a very, very tense time indeed. Who ever thought that being an activist exposing scumbaggery for a living would be such a financial drain?
Why don't you go ahead and tell us your website, Vinny?
It's the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. And if you happen to be one of the New Zealanders tuning in through the Bush Telegraph system, you can go there, and there's a Kiwi Bank account which you can donate into, and I appreciate regular donations as well. If you want to donate a few dollars a month, I've got many listeners who only do a dollar a month just as a token gesture, and they don't realize that it's usually down to the last 50 cents when we're paying the rent at the end of every week. So they may not actually realize just how much of a difference they make on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, as well as the PayPal buttons that are on the homepage. Again, that's the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. And any support that people can give me right now would be greatly appreciated because my YouTube channel recently got deleted without reason, without recourse, and it's basically all my AdSense revenue and everything. I had the most subscribed channel in New Zealand for news, even more than the local mainstream media, and it's all gone.
We had the same thing happen here at Revolution Radio. Our YouTube channel got deleted. I want to welcome, we have two more guests that have joined us. Steve Travesty, the amazing Steve Travesty, who does so much work here and has his own show. Steven, welcome to the show.
Oh, lies and slander. I'm a lazy bastard.
You do great, man. I really love listening to you.
Thank you. Thank you. How you doing?
Pretty good. I'm filling in for Seth. He's on hiatus for a bit longer, so we'll cover for him when we can.
Absolutely, absolutely. How was your weekend?
Oh, it's fine. Kind of boring. Let's welcome Wally Ladd. Wally, thank you for joining us.
Hey, I just didn't want to hear poetry.
It worked, though.
Hey, thanks for having me, Keith. Always a pleasure.
This is a wide open roundtable. Anybody, Liz, you were first to join us. What would you like to talk about? Or Lisa, I'm sorry.
Keith, I'm open to any conversations, you know? I'll just interject if you need me, and if I have something I feel is important, I'll jump in. Otherwise, I think you're in good shape, man. Have a great show.
Thank you so much. Let's just go around the table. Vinny, what would you like to talk about?
I wanted to talk about, like, internet trolling, and basically it's like how the truth movement, especially on Facebook, is actually full of people who don't actually embody the real ideals of being a truther, which is verifying facts and being polite and actually trying to help others. I just see a whole bunch of people who believe whatever they're told, who basically make it their mission to abuse people like us and accuse us of things like being clones from the Vril Society or reptilians or something like that, of course, with zero evidence, because there's a mental illness, I think, that exists and will persist in the truth movement, whereby you will wake up from the current perception of reality, you know, believing vaccines are safe and that cops tell the truth and that politicians are there to not enslave you, to the opposite, which happens to be the truth. But unfortunately, some kind of misconnection happens in the middle, and it's like an adjustment period. When I first woke up to all of this, that was exactly the behavior that I'm criticizing here was exactly the same behavior that I was exuding, because when you are getting into this change of your perception and reality, it's inherently damaging. And damaged people are a danger not only to themselves, but to others. And sometimes it just takes a couple of years of experience in the field to realize that you don't know everything. Yelling and being aggressive at people and making accusations without any basis to them doesn't win you any friends. And ultimately, you need to learn how to grow up.
You know, that's funny. That's funny that you say that. We never have any trolling or any drama here. Zero.
If you say so.
Well, you know, I think that at the end of the day, we have to be at a point of being self-evident. So we have to just simply be making our reports. We make our reports. We don't call it a truth or movement or anything like that. Just do it. Just say, like, this is the information that I've found. I want to inform you about it. And the rest, we can't help people that don't want to help themselves. But at the very least, we can make our reports. And I think that that's a sound judgment call.
You're absolutely right, Steve. And I think one of the other things is, like, other than accusing people of things that you've got no evidence for, there's like a slander and suspicion. And it's even amongst us radio show hosts, you know, like people who you would think should know better. And I had a sort of a stoush with a friend of mine, Evelyn Gilbert, from a local blog here, Aotearoa Wider Perspective. And you know when you're having an argument with a friend and you're kind of worried about them sort of thing, and you're kind of considering whether or not to block them and end the friendship or actually have a conversation and explain what's going on? Well, we had like a 4-hour conversation, and she told me the whole experience that she had in the Netherlands, where these gangsters were trying to destroy her life, take her $1 million business off her. And she escaped with only maybe 10 grand or so after 5 years of full-on constant trauma. And what she explained to me is that this created a condition called CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And when she explained to me the symptoms of it, I was like, oh my God, that sounds like my behavior. It's like, if you get attacked by something, your ability to process information kind of falls by the wayside all of a sudden, and you kind of like launch into attack because your body's actually been programmed to attack things that are threatening you now, and the ability to stay calm and rational and control the actual kind of chemical reactions in your body that make you kind of go into rage fits and things like that gets somewhat subdued, and it becomes very difficult to operate in a normal society anymore. You know, like she was telling me about her and her husband were sometimes so depressed that they couldn't get out of bed for days, you know, and we all go through this trauma. I mean, just waking up to the truth is hard enough, but when you've actually woken up to the truth plus being traumatized by the ruthless criminal sociopaths that we're actually opposed to, it can be really, really painful and traumatic. And that's why I have a lot of empathy and patience for people who actually, you know, fly off the handle at me a lot of the time, because I know that they're probably hurting too, just as much as I am or anybody else.
Mm. Well, I also like want to say, like, you know, because if we're talking about things like having those kind of like wild reactions, like I guess it all depends too, because are we talking about like when you've got like somebody who's kind of like in that Alex Jones level of like fear based predictive programming, where everything has to be a violent reaction because you're preemptively fighting a psychopath, or are we talking about, you know, when you're interfacing directly with somebody, such as like the cops are harassing you or something to that effect?
Well, maybe a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, because I think both result in similar trauma, right? And I want to actually say that this, because last night it was my very, very good friend Penny Bright's birthday, her 60th birthday, and a friend of hers, Ike Finau, was there. Now, Ike Finau is a New Zealander, and he's gone into the courts, and he's proven that their court system is fraudulent on a number of occasions. He's one of the only people in the country who can not turn up to court, and the cops refuse to come and arrest him because they know that they'll be in trouble if they do. And one night, I think this was like 6 years ago or so, when I was just first starting out doing this, I was going around with cameras to all the public meetings and protests, and I get a text from him at like 9:30 at the night. Vinny, I think you are an effing spy. this is how I actually said it. I approached to him, and we were outside on the street, just outside the party venue, and this is how I actually said it to him about this. And I said, you sent me a text, and he said, Vinny, I think you are an effing spy. And we all laughed. And then I told him, I sent you a text back, WTF, lol. And we all laughed. And then I told him he sent me a text back, F you, a-hole. And we all laughed again. And he said, you know, sometimes I get like that, man. I'm sorry. All right, and sometimes that's actually all it takes, and I think that a lot of the times people in our movement, we're all kind of like damaged people, and we start feuds with each other because we refuse to actually kind of go up and try to repair the bridge sometimes.
You know, when I'm having a Skype conversation that ends up like that, I just point at my avatar and I say, please refer all of your complaints to my reptilian handlers.
Listen, I want to be sure everybody, Wally's only going to be with us for the first hour, I think, Wally. It's very late where he is, so I want to give Wally or Lisa a chance to chime in on this subject.
No, you caught me eating a Honeycrisp apple.
Lisa, do you have any comments?
I can take it for a minute. I was just listening to Vincent's excellent story. I really liked the way that he was trying to separate emotion from rational thinking. However, I go a completely different route. I have been stabbed in the back more than one time, and I've learned through trial and error, the best route for me to do is to go and figure out who my suspects are, blame them all, and see what their reactions are, because you know your friends, and your friends know you. And so usually, let's just put it this way. So far, there's only been one time I haven't figured out who's really messed with me. So I don't know, maybe different things work for different people, but I go a completely different route than your friend, Vincent. I just blame everybody and let the chips fall. And if you know, and my friends know that. And so they might get like a little bit like, oh, you really offended me. How could you even think that? And I'm like, hey, this is my list. You know, I love you to death. Tell me you didn't do it and I'll believe you. And usually I do. And usually it's not them. But that's how it works for me. How about you guys and the other people in this conversation? I'd be interested to know how you handle trolls and friends who aren't really friends. Do you not give them the energy? Are you able just to blow them off and just be like, eh, whatever, later? Because I can't. I don't know. Maybe it's a girl thing. I don't know. Let me hear from.
It's kind of like a case by case basis. Like, for example, the story I just told you about Ike, that just happened last night, so it's fresh in my mind. But a few days ago, my former co-host was accusing me of being like a leftist and supporting scum. And what was the quote that he gave me? I can probably actually read out for you his final comments to me before I blocked him. And this was previous to me actually sending him a list of all the things that actually trigger really bad stress responses into me, you know, like please bro, you know, be sensitive to my needs, because I actually am a pretty damaged individual. And he says, C's, like it's a word that starts with a C that rhymes with the word hunts, like you, make good people like me into the people who you love to hate. Go on, Vinny, ban free speech, suck up to leftists, censorship is a poor substitute for rational debate. If you were in charge of this country, this country would be even more tyrannical. And this is actually like the maybe the third or fourth conversation that I've had with him in recent weeks, where he's something that really actually triggers a response in me is when people tell me that I'm something that I'm not. right? For example, sucking up to the left, that's not what I do. I'm a journalist, bro. I'm cynical, I'm jaded, and I cover both sides of the debate. That's what you're supposed to do. And if somebody's on the left or the right side of the spectrum, it doesn't mean that everything they say is right or everything that they say is wrong or that I support everything that they say. You know what I'm saying?
And what about you, Steve?
Me? I just don't care. I just don't care. You know what? As you know, for all I know, you guys are all vocal algorithms because I haven't met any of you in real life. I can be certain of Sean David Morton, and that's it, because he's the only guy I've met in real life. For all I know, you guys are all AI computers, incredibly sophisticated.
I expected that out of you, Steve. Yeah. I respect that because that is, you are exactly correct.
I love you all. You're very, very entertaining and lovable computer algorithms. But until I've met you in person, I can't take any chances.
You know, especially, you know, in these times where there's so much change going on, these are the attitudes of the people that are awake, is what I'm hearing. And Vincent, it's interesting. I hear over in Europe, they're starting to go after trolls on the internet. I seen the headline somewhere, and in fact, I just tried looking for the article. But isn't that unique? You know, now we have trolls.
I'd like to make a comment, if you guys don't mind. I totally agree with Vinny that it's kind of a case-by-case basis. Everybody's different, and I would also agree we all have some damage, or at least that's my experience. I guess I can't generalize and say everybody does. I think there are some very advanced souls here that are here just to help us. But one of the techniques I learned, I've trained with some very powerful clairvoyants, and one thing that's really easy anybody can do is you just visualize the person's face and you talk to them. And you kind of tell them, you know, where you're at, because a lot of times communication is difficult. But if you do that, I mean, you will be amazed at what a difference it makes. You just say, hey, man, you know, this is, you know, what I'm feeling and where I'm at. And, you know, what's up? And, you know, I love you, bro, or whatever it is. You may not love them, you know. It's this unique with everybody. That's a technique I would encourage anybody to try, and I think you will be amazed at the results.
As long as they're not a psychopathic troll.
Yeah, in fact, that was one of the main arguments I've been having with lately, is how exactly do you identify a psychopath? And if people accuse me of something, and it's absolutely wrong, and I quickly show them the evidence, actually, no, I did speak about that, yes, I did make this picture, and so on and so forth, and they don't admit that they're wrong, or apologize, or something like that, that's a red flag. It doesn't mean you're absolutely a psychopath, because sometimes, even for professional therapists, it can take them up to 2 years in therapy with a psychopath before being able to actually figure out whether or not they are one. And it just means that, basically, I want that kind of psychopathic tendency out of my life. If people are dishonest, if people accuse me of things that don't have any basis, if they don't apologize, if they don't offer support in your times of need and simply criticize you, then it basically goes into the red flag pile, and I don't really try to invest too much more in those relationships because, well, honestly, I'm a really sensitive guy, and when I get really badly offended, it's usually because it's some psycho telling me that I'm like them, right? That's what they always do. They say, oh, you're a troll, you're a shill, or you're this, that, or the other. And they tell you all the time exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, it's called projection. Mm. I'd like to welcome Wingman has joined us. Welcome, Wingman.
Hello, Keith. Hello, everyone else. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Wingman.
Hi.
Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I've been listening to the conversation. Very, very enjoyable. I must admit, I'm quite into psychology, so I do watch patterns and how people react And it's especially fascinating when in times of conflict, in times of argument, or even sometimes when you find yourself getting closer to a truth of sorts. And there are patterns that have emerged that I've noticed. And one of them is often when you find, say, you're in a kind of group capacity and you're getting close to a kind of realization of sorts, you'll often find there's a hostility that comes in all of a sudden, I've found. And it's like, where did that come from? And things like this. So I often find trolling and hostility is, I found that, you can learn from it. And sometimes it's even a clue that you're heading in the right direction, you know.
Let me just interject really quick. I can hear some typing, so somebody needs to mute. Please go ahead, continue, Wingman.
So like I say, you can learn from it, and I've just found that sometimes the capacity in which it happens is interesting and highlights issues in itself. For example, why is that conflict arising? I found that often it's because the individual is, say it's in a group capacity, could be in a social setting, it's because an individual wants to change the topic because they feel uncomfortable or mostly unknowledgeable about the topic that you might be discussing. So they feel stupid. So literally they will become the spanner in the works and try and sway you off, the quite enjoyable conversations that you might be having, and that will appear as a conflict. But a lot of the time it's to protect the ego and things like that, I found. So it is quite fascinating. But one of the other things, I hope it's not a topic change, but you were talking about information and earlier, or someone mentioned information and about doing good with what you discover and how you use the news that's out there and the information that's out there. And yeah, this has kind of been on my mind today. And one of the questions, if you don't mind, if I may, I'd love to pose, is, and I've been thinking a lot about it, is how we've used the information in the last 25 years, because there has been a drastic change. We don't really visit libraries anymore, and the speed of information is, if you want to find something out, like, let's say statistics on what's recent in the news now, Ebola, there's suddenly a live website with all the stats on there, for example, or the rate of accidents in a given area or crime in a given area, stats galore. I'd love to know, and I think it could be quite beneficial if that's okay, but I'd love to know how you guys perceive how we've used the information in the last 25 years with the advent of the internet, and maybe what obstacles have been. Okay, because the way I see it, we should be using information for increasing our happiness. And there's no doubt that when I look around, there's more and more people on depressants and people are feeling frustrated. There's a frustration. So there's that aspect of things. And it's like information is being used to control us, to persecute us, to send us fines in the post, to snap our registration plate if we're going too fast. So it's like, do you see what I'm getting at? And it's frustrating because I'm seeing more and more people becoming wiser, more and more people becoming more informed, more and more people becoming more knowledgeable. But there's this disparity that I don't fully understand, and I need help with understanding it to find out where we're going wrong and what we should change,
Let's go around the table and get everybody's reaction. Vinny, would you like to go first, or Steve?
Well, I think that the first order is that do these fundamental truths that we know that rattle people's cages, is it actually information that they are interested in at the moment? Because even though we may think that it is a sense of urgency that they must know this now, they may not be ready to hear it, plain and simple. And there is no sense of urgency for them, and there may not be a way for us to portray that sense of urgency for them. In other words, they are not your target audience, your target demographic. As people that are doing what we do, you know, and broadcasting reports, right? We have to actually be sensitive to who we're telling this to when we're directly telling somebody. You know, like right now, who knows who's listening? They, you know, they're not in the conversation. They're listening to our conversation. They can turn it on, they can turn it off, and it doesn't help them to yell at their radio. But if all of a sudden you go out to the town square and you grab your megaphone like Vinny does, you know, now you've got a different situation because you're going to rattle somebody's cage, most likely.
I actually have people tell me to F off when I'm using the mega, even the protesters, bro.
Oh, yeah, sure. Because, you know, you're what you want to bring to them is not on the same wavelength. I spent one day with the Occupy movement at Occupy, at the heart of Occupy, down in Wall Street, because I live in the shadow of New York City, so it was, like, right there. And not that I was getting any negative reactions from what I wanted to talk about when I tried to have a conversation. It's that I got a very, very small reaction out of it, which kind of showed me that there is a certain level of hype to some of the things that people believed was happening within the crowd of Occupy Wall Street, because I couldn't just go in there and have something important to say and be the center of attention for a moment as I led an open discussion. And I maybe have like five people, if that, out of like 1,000 people that were in the park that were listening to me. I didn't get any kind of violent reaction, but I didn't get anybody who was just like, oh man, this guy has given us some real smart financial you know, stuff about the banking conspiracy, yada, yada, yada. And so that was a teachable experience. And then, of course, there's when I say something on Facebook and somebody who's my friend that has nothing to do with conspiracies gets angry because of what I said on Facebook.
I'd like to react to Wingman's question. So what I'm seeing is there's kind of a etheric or psychic internet. I'm seeing I always use the description of throwing a pebble into a pond, and the ripples are echoing back and forth. And the veils are getting thinner. People are starting to see through this stuff. And the economy is really driving it, because people are going, why the heck, you know, why don't our leaders do, you know, make it work? But they're not leaders. It's a corporation. You know, they're in it for, you know, their own interests. So I think there's a real level where a lot of people, like you said, Steve, a lot of people aren't getting it. They're resistant. But a lot of people are. I keep running into more and more people that understand when I tell them the Fed is a private central bank. It's not a part of our government.
You got to realize that usually the people that are the loudest and most passionate about this are the ones that have had such a significant portion, if not all of it, taken away from them, that they've got little else to lose. And it, to them, it's more important to get the word out, because they look at it and say, like, well, part of the problem is the sickness of the delusion of society, and maybe I can remedy that by telling people what I've learned. And the people that have this violent reaction are the people in whom the system serves well. You know, I can't talk to somebody collecting Social Security about the conspiracy of Social Security, because they're benefiting from that system. Whereas in I don't really trust, you know, the future of Social Security, and I do not wish to participate in it. And there are other various reasons why, at the end of the day, it makes no sense that I just give them my money by law.
I'd like to get everybody.
Can I jump in? Because I've been waiting to like jump in on this one, because it's actually quite a topic close to my heart. The information that's going around, and how we're spreading it, how are we using it, how are we interacting with other people who are doing the same thing, right? And one person that came to mind when you were saying that is an activist called Chris Fowley, who's the owner of the hemp store here in New Zealand. And the reason he started the hemp store, I had this really great interview with him, was because they'd just run for the Legalized Cannabis Party, and they had a whole lot of debt, and it was terrible. And they did something that I later on did of my own accord without knowing what they were doing first, is they created the shop as not only a center for cannabis activism, but also to create a residual revenue stream for the long haul, right? And that's something that a lot of people don't understand, is that patience is a virtue for a reason. If you're not patient, if you're not willing to go into this fight, be in it for the long haul, however long it takes, you're not going to have a whole lot of longevity because you're expecting something right now. And going back to what Steve said about Occupy, at the time Occupy was happening here in New Zealand, I actually received a text from the leader, the person who was actually setting up the camp and everything like that. Vinny, you need to get down here. You need to stay here every day. And I was just like, bro, I have a 5-day-a-week radio show. I have to do that in audio and video, and that's 2 hours per day. And I need a strong internet connection for that, and I need just the privacy to just sit there at my computer and do this. I mean, sure, I'll come down and I'll make videos for you and all of that. And I did. In fact, if you search Occupy Auckland on YouTube, all of the top videos that come out with like 5,000 hits, 10,000 hits are my videos. And they had 7 people on their media team, and their videos were getting like 100 hits or 200 hits or something like that. So me by myself, only contributing a little on occasion, actually had a much, much more effect in terms of spreading the ideals and the information, not only to Occupy, but the people who are actually looking and listening to them, right? And this is the thing. When I told him this initially on the phone, he sends me an angry text message back. He's saying, "This is it. This is the revolution. It's happening. Blah blah blah. And if you can't get on board, it's." I mean, like, this dude had been in activism for like a month. I've been in it for years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, I felt like the old man among the young whippersnappers all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying? Yeah,
that would be like, that would be like George Washington having like an argument with like Sam Adams about like who's the bigger revolutionary. You know, it's just like, George, man, I've been doing this since you were still, you know, sucking on King George's tit, you know?
that kind of thing. And it's funny because when you go down to protests as I do, and most of the time I'm not actually really even on the speaker list, and in fact I'm sort of like semi the darling slash the pariah when I go to protests, because I'm kind of like making jokes through the megaphone as well and that kind of thing. But when I first started out, I realized that if you're going to public events, don't do what the media do and go and interview a completely random person who looks incredibly unwell dressed or something like that and ask them stupid douchebag questions. What you do is you have a look for the people that are holding the megaphones. You have a look for the people that are speaking on the microphones either at the beginning or at the end of the protest and everything. And you go up to them and you start asking them who they are and what they do, just very general scope questions. And they actually become, it's almost like an encyclopedia just got opened directly in front of you, and the information comes pouring out. And that's the difference between somebody who just shows up to a protest to do the chanting and somebody who's actually there for a reason, because they've got conviction. And on that point, I'll finish in just a sec. What happens is when people insult you, if you're in that position, you get really, really offended because it's an affront to your entire existence, the sacrifice of your years, lives. You could be earning millions of dollars or whatever, but instead you're exposed in scumbaggery, you know, like myself. And the problem is, mate, when you defend yourself against people who insult you that have no basis behind their insult, they then call you egotistical and say that it's your pride.
Lisa, did you have any comments? And then we'll turn to Wally.
Of course, I am an outspoken girl. I always have comments. Okay, I even took notes. Back to Vinny. I really liked how you said that using an example like the bullhorn, people were mad at you, even the truthers. And I find that is so true forever. People, even here, We are so diverse and we have personalities, and that equals emotions. And that's where the emotions comes in from our earlier conversations, you know, rationale versus emotion. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking. If we can just all agree to go on these, like, occupations to have one goal, just pick one goal, get the signatures, you know, force it through. Maybe we have a chance. But if everybody just has signs up and is like, you know, stop the Fed, you know, they're like laughing at us going, ah, ha, 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 you're buying me lunch right now. Ah, you know what I'm saying? Okay, so, and then how are we using communication? Wingman, I thought that was an excellent question. A lot of people are mining. You know, we always hear about the NSA is mining us and there's data mining here and the corporations, you know, and the new apps are stealing our information from Facebook. If anyone doesn't know that by now, you know, A, they're not going to know because they're in denial. And the other thing is, here's what I do. Here's my example. I learned about fluoride, right? Everybody knows about fluoride now. I don't have to go into that. Here's what I did. I went to my dentist, and I said, here are a couple articles I printed out. And he comes back to me, and he says, I have been to dental school. Have you? And I said, no, I haven't. I've been on the internet. And then I went on, you know, I'm a house mom, and I get a little bit of slack about that sometimes. I also have a home business, and I do a lot of other things that I don't really talk about. But as a mom, I'm going to confront my dentist about my son's teeth when he says he needs fluoride. And I'm saying this is rat poison. The doctor comes back to me and says, oh, well, I've been to dental school, and every dentist is taught that fluoride is this. If it were rat poison, that would be bad, wouldn't it? And I looked up to him and said, it is bad. So guess where we will not be going anymore? And guess who will be getting more emails about fluoride? So that's one example of how I took action. And I also have one more example, and then I'll give the floor back. We have 20, I'm, like I said, a home mom. I have an 8-year-old. He goes to public school, and they've done amazing things with him, so I don't even want to go there. However, when I do have a problem with them, I go right to the source. We had 29 students, the legal limit, in his classroom. Turns out there were two grades that had the legal limit in his school. So I wrote the superintendent. I didn't expect anything. I just had to vent. Didn't know where to go. 1 week later, I don't know what happened. I don't know if other moms jumped on board or if this man looked into it and saw what the situation was. But he went against the whole town that did not want to pay for our kids' education and got two new teachers in here. So anyone that doesn't think it's possible, I am here to tell you, get off your butts. Call these people. Get on them. They might do something. You might be surprised. And if they do something, tell them thank you. You know, don't let it go unnoticed. Praise these people. Because we have other people that I would like to praise, like Dennis Kucinich, who totally lamed out and went to work for a lobbyist. I mean, I bought into that for years. So even me awake, there's still things that we are learning daily. Take action is what, you know, my bottom line on that. And I'm done. What did you guys?
Well, the easiest way to make somebody lose hope is to give them a little bit of it and then take it away from them.
Yeah, you know, like a prime example of that is with the Sovereign Citizens Movement, which those of you that know that what I speak sounds like it, but it is not. I am not in the Sovereign Citizens Movement. What I am has no earthly definition, per se. I am me, plain and simple. However, here's the difference. You know, the Sovereign Citizens Movement, you look at all these little things where, you know, people talk about, like, here's what I did in court and got this victory. And then if you actually take a look, instead of, like, seeing that, oh, there was a victory in this judgment here, you end up particularly recognizing that what they did was, is that they that's the carrot on the stick. They allowed one guy, for whatever various reason, to be rendered a judgment in his favor as a sign of false hope to get other people wrangled into the system in a certain way. When at the end of the day, it's their game board, their rules. and they're making it up as they go along, except on levels that are secret to us to begin with, levels that only the bar knows. And that is an important point of fact. And that goes the same for all these other public institutions, for what lawmakers do on local levels and international levels, corporations and the like. That is an important tidbit for you to take away. And when you are ready, if you want to follow that path, you will end up dropping everything about this legal BS.
Can I, may I just come in in reply to what the people have said here?
Go right ahead, Wingman.
The reason I brought up the topic of information is because I do truly believe it's an important one. I believe it shapes our lives, and depending on how we use that information, we can touch the lives of others, or information gathered by others can be used to influence and subjugate us and monitor us and so on and so forth. So it can be used for good and it can be used for bad. It can be used for the benefit of man, or it can be used to hinder man's progress. Now, I think we're experiencing both fronts at the moment. And, you know, where once upon a time I would have had to go to a library, or if I wanted stats, global stats, I would have had to travel the world to gather some of those global stats, like weather patterns, like earthquakes, like, you know, so on and so forth, because we weren't so interconnected. So, you know, even things like, I never knew that cannabis could have such beneficial effects. I never knew that colloidal silver could have such benefit effects over medicine. I never knew that prescription drugs had such an impact on our lives and so on and so forth. So there was a lot of things that I didn't know that I am able to know now and have quick access to. Now, at the moment, I feel as though a lot of the information gathering that takes place is a realization information. It's what's going on, what's happening against us, how we're being violated, how many of these corporations are abusing the Earth's planet resources, and how bankers are corrupting us, and you know, a lot about the system and the world we live in seems to be happening. So I'm learning much more about reality, but the bigger picture of things. But I just feel, and I don't know if you guys feel the same, that we're being caught up in there's so much that's happening against us to hinder mankind and how we're using that information, and it's like we're getting caught up in that part of it, and I feel as though, and I obviously like your opinion on this, but I feel as though there's a need for a remedy part. It's like if there were stages on how man uses information to evolve, I guess, you know, depending on how you want to use your information. But if there were stages of sorts, I feel as though we're at the realization stage now, where we're talking to each other, we're communicating with each other, we're telling each other what's going on, how we're being violated, how we're being controlled, how we're being monitored. So I feel this dam, and it's building up, this stream is building up, this frustration building up. And it's like, it's got to blow. She's got to blow, you know. And that's the remedy part that I'd like to see come. So I'd like to understand that part of it, because it needs to come for us to be able to, I feel, use the information that we've learned for, I guess, the next stage, which I perceive as innovation in the new climate of realization. I don't know. What do you guys think?
You know, I'm not going to chime in here. Just sitting listening, what an interesting topic. Wonderful roundtable, Keith. Glad you got these brilliant minds together. the big thing is reprogramming. We were programmed one way. Now, as Keith says, the veil's being lifted. We're having to reprogram. Oh, man, my mind is spinning 10 miles an hour.
Just relax.
It's just basically the getting into reprogramming and figuring out, instead of going out and programming a new iPhone or a new laptop, we need to be programming the computer we have in our head. We're still not using enough of it. Or figuring out how to access more of it. We have a very powerful mind. I think we should be researching more than the cell phones, you know, the latest, what, G6 or the latest laptop. We got that right on top of our head. Because we're doing, apparently we're not doing something right because it is moving a little bit too slow for changing, I feel.
Do you guys feel the frustration that I feel with regards to we have this information and we're not using it to our capabilities? We're not using it as we could use it for the sake of, you know, bringing about wealth. And I don't mean monetary wealth. I mean happy environment wealth, you know, looking at each other. And, you know, when I look at the old films of like the 60s and 70s and there were so, you know, and just generally, you know, people, there's so many more smiles on people's faces and innovation and art and music was richer and there was a much more culture. And it seems, you know, that if that were a share price, you know, it's kind of gone down. And so, I, you know, do you guys feel that frustration that, you know, it's like we've been hindered from using our knowledge and wisdom for a greater good. And I don't think we will know what that greater good looks like, until we dare to go there, until we dare to venture there, until we put our, you know, we're bold enough to venture into the reckless unknown and realize the fruits of our information gathering and our harvest and our wisdom and our passion and our heartfelt desires, you know, because many of us are caught in jobs that we don't actually enjoy. Oh, God forbid, I'm in a job that I don't enjoy. That doesn't make sense. When you really look at that, that doesn't make sense.
And we're supposed to be doing what we love. Thank you, Wingman. That's exactly what I was trying to get out. You're exactly correct.
You know, I was having a chat with one of my friends today while I'm doing my seasonal job over the weekends and talking about how like the economy's really sucked on me. And, you know, they said like, well, you know, people, they don't want to hire, you know, guys that look like you, you know, or whatever, you know, you got long hair and piercings or whatever. And I said, like, you know, most of the people I know that have long hair and piercings or whatever, like me, you know, they, you know, sometimes they often have jobs. So it's really got nothing to do with that. You know, not to mention, I also could have said, it's not like I have the lip piercing in when I go to the interview. it's just the matter that, you know, there's a whole perception, with unemployed people, or homeless people or whatever, that it's entirely, their fault per se, and not to be changing the very, very spiritual level of what is our fault or not, when we talk about personal responsibility, and ultimately we are where we're supposed to be, et cetera, et cetera. However, as you know, as far as that state of affairs of being able to earn a paycheck and why we have to go and earn a paycheck and have certain bills, et cetera, et cetera. There needs to be a change with all this. You know, people didn't have to work this hard, you know, to have a life back in the day. And then all of a sudden people wanted things like, oh, I want to get plumbing to my house. Oh, I want to get electricity to my house. You know, they want to have a phone line installed on the house and get all these external things that require a monthly upkeep. And all that seemed fine in their budgets at the time because of the way that they worked. But now, you know, now it's different because the costs for all those things have changed. And then, of course, there's the fact that you can be paying taxes on a house or the mortgage situation. Of course, that mortgage is a fraud in its entirety, and you know, which is the whole point. It's like, to me, it shocks me that there's still people out there that haven't learned a lesson from the 2008 financial crisis. And I've been rambling at this for a little too long now, so please work with what I've said.
Yeah, Vinny, you've been awfully quiet. Do you have any comments, sir?
Yes, actually, and it's you've come to me at the perfect time, because the whole time while you guys were speaking, I was searching for one photo on a friend of mine's wall. He quoted one of my Facebook posts, and I couldn't find it on my wall, so I've been looking through his, like, 800 pictures. And the second you asked me to start piping up, that's exactly when I found it. How's that for synchronicity? Here's what I said, and can you name me one person who's done the sovereignty, free man, or straw man thing that, one, didn't get arrested, harassed, or tortured by the authorities? Two, still has all their private property, house, car, and boat. Three, didn't lose their children or partner. Four, currently has a good life, good work, and a happy family. Five, has no post-traumatic stress disorder or mental and social problems.
Lisa, please go ahead. It looked like you wanted to...
That's a really tall order. He's just not cut out. 100% of the population on that one, I think. But I have met one person that is sovereign, and it's a daily battle. It, you know, he has to use the right language. He has to walk the right walk. Otherwise, you know, we would not be ever seeing him again. And so he's a recluse, and do you blame him? And then all those other things down the road, if you just take out that first thing, the other things that Vincent mentioned become almost nearly impossible. But if you exclude the first thing, the sovereignty, then you've got an open door for a little playroom with those other things. And I think that everyone can imagine themselves, oh, no, that's not me, until you really become confronted with a problem and you have to, like, go within and be like, where did that come from? And a lot of people are in denial. They know something's wrong, but they're not willing to really look in and be like, why do I think that? You know, and then after, like, the why, then, you know, like, let's say, oh, yeah, that's because, you know, this happened to me when I was 3, and this is what happened, you know, in this situation, and that's what I remember, and that's what I'm going to. And that's the paradigm that I think a lot of people are starting to, the ones that are awake are starting to say, hey, I realize that now. I'm going to step out of that paradigm, and I'm going to make my own decisions. But so many people are in denial that they aren't willing to do that. So, Stephen, I think what you said had a lot of relation to what Vincent just said.
Right. Let me give people the extreme basic of what it is, because I said before, I am me. You know, the I am, right? It's the name game. Everything that they do is based, you know, is based on having joined her with a legal name. And that is the crux of their power. unless there is somebody who has been harmed outside of the system, you know, so they have no power over you. So, like, you know, if you're sitting there and you're staring at a court docket that says the people of the state of X, Y, and Z versus the legal name that your parents put on the birth certificate when you were born, that's supposed to be a benefit for you, as they so believed, that is a place where everything you do is voluntary. With the last incursion that I had with the authorities, which was only about 2 months ago now, it was a issue of them trying to wrangle me into traffic, into harassing me into contract with them, and I refused. The very first words out of their mouth was license and registration. The very first words out of my mouth is, you have no jurisdiction over me. I am not a tax-paying citizen. At that point, they should have gone down a completely different path of questioning, but instead he's looking for a legal name that cannot exist based on the facts that I just presented to him. But he's programmed to not be able to work with that. My refusal to correspond with them, while not disrupting them in any way, misleading them in any way, just saying, look, man, you got no authority over me. I'm just passing through. I'm just traveling through. I want to go home. Please move so I may go home. I am not your enemy. Did all these things. You know, I am not making war with these people. And they ended up kidnapping me under the guise of an arrest.
Can I ask, Steve, had you done anything wrong?
What's that?
Had you done anything wrong for them to stop you?
No, nothing.
So that's kind of, when I mentioned the remedy part, that's kind of what I'm getting at. They shouldn't have been stopped you in the first place. And that's, you know, that's where the remedy should be.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Now, you see, the reason why I had been in that situation the way that I was very, very, very simple. I hadn't learned my lesson, and there were still plates on my car. The plates made the car state property under the presumption of registration.
Everybody, we'll be right back after the top of the hour. Thank you all for joining us.
Thanks for still being with us. I want to welcome everybody back. This is a live broadcast on Studio A,
October 19th. It's the 20th for some of you in different time zones to the east of us here. This is Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And I'd like to see a whole bunch more donations. We want to get at least several months ahead. Hawk told me the other day that December is always kind of a tight month. So we want to get ahead and at least be 2 or 3 months ahead, if not 6. So please, even at the price of a cup of coffee, man, and there's so many good, wonderful things, your donations that you can get, including the seed bank for a $100 donation. And be sure if you do that, that you mention this is for the seed bank. You know, so Hawk knows that's what you're, you know, the purpose of the donation. We have so many wonderful guests on the show tonight. We have the wonderful, amazing Vinny Eastwood, the fantastic Steve Travesty, who does so much for the station and has his own show. And, Steven, I want you to promote your show when we get to you. We have Wingman, another wonderful friend of the station, Wally Ladd, who has been with us for a while now. And we have Lisa is it Vibes? Is that how I should pronounce your last name, Lisa?
Yeah, it's Lisa, and I go by Vibes in the chat room. So, yeah, sometimes I get the vibes. They can go either way. They can go good vibes or bad vibes. Depending on what you put in, it's what you get out.
Excellent.
Nice to get your vibes.
That's actually very similar to Russia, because you only get out what you put in there.
Oh, come on.
Okay, everybody, listen. Steve Travesty had a story he wanted to tell, so I want to turn the floor to him.
Yeah. Let me wrap it up real quick. For those just tuning in, I was talking about an arrest encounter I had just a couple months ago, and in which I did not give them any legal pretense to mess with me. Although I still had problems, and the thing I was saying as the break was pulling out is that. One of the main things that was causing me issue was that I had not yet given up on having license plates on my car, and those license plates are state property, thus turning my vehicle into state property. As of this moment, I travel of my own free accord. There are no plates. Those things have all been returned to what we call here in the States, Department of Motor Vehicles. So, but to deal with things, you know, I had my arrest. I dealt with my night in jail and the little bail hearing afterwards where they let me go. And there was the date set for me to come back for arraignment. And basically all I did was, because like I said before, this is about the legal name. Very, very simple. You see, they're just looking for somebody to speak for this legal name, which most people do not know. It is not who they are. They want you to commit name fraud. So what you do is you go to court. This works anywhere where the British Accreditation Registry exists, anywhere where you've got a justice system that goes back to the City of London. You basically you go in there with a copy of the birth certificate, a proper copy with the raised seal and all that from your town or wherever your health records are kept, vital records, and you go in there with that. And when you go in, you tell them two sentences. I am the witness to the name fraud being perpetrated here, and I have the prima facie evidence of that fraud in my hand. On and for the record, is it now your intent to entice me into slavery? What you've done is that you've blown up their whole game right there on the spot, and you've put them into a question that they cannot possibly answer without incriminating themselves. The first time I ever had to deal that, the prosecutor was actually dumb enough to say yes. The second time I did it, the prosecutor was protected by the magistrate, which he's not supposed to do, and then he answered the question for him, saying, I do not know what that means, which is what they do when they don't want to incriminate themselves, is that they play stupid. with that, they told me, if you want to do something here, you go and you look at the practice book, and you can file any motion you want. We're going to set this up for 3 weeks from now, yada, yada, yada. So whatever left, that was it as far as where I had to defend myself, because I abandoned the name. It's not my name to begin with. It's their name. It's their property. That's why it's registered. And then I filed a motion. This is not a motion that exists in any of their books. This is a motion that exists in fact. And it's explained in fact. And there's a lot of words to the motion. I'm not going to get into that right now because we're having our enjoyable little roundtable. But I filed a motion for a notice of attempted murder. It is attempted murder because they attempted to coerce me into being legally dead by admitting to be a dead fiction, the legal name, which would have made me their property in which they could do what they will with, which includes murder and all forms of abuse to my person. That was filed under the docket for that arrest incident. And it was filed under a Jane Doe -755, which is a legal citizen, honorable citizen of the City of London, who has who is a member of the bar, in which I had been gifted the authorization to be an agent of that legal name, acting in full honor, which allows me to be my own proper attorney. So I simply gave it to them under Jane Doe, and now it's theirs to deal with. I don't have to do anything anymore. That's all been taken care of now.
I want to mention my three laws of traffic, of driving, in other words. Don't hit anything. That's my first one. I'm not to belittle what you're saying, Steve. That was really great, and I would love to hear more about it. You've talked about that before, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
Anything you need to worry about, man. That's it.
No, let me just quickly finish. These are very simple laws. Yeah. Don't hit anything. Don't get pulled over. And any traffic signs or stoplights, all that stuff, are merely recommendations. Those are my three traffic laws.
And you but are no, pretty.
Go ahead.
Keith, you are pretty correct. Is the laws of the land is not to harm anybody. And the thing is I'm sure the six of us right now, and there's a few others, that are responsible, but the biggest thing comes down to responsibility. If everybody did and can do what Steve has done, and I've watched you, Steve, and I'm quite impressed of how you've come along with that, you're responsible. And I would have to say probably 75 to 80% are responsible. But it's the other percentage that's not responsible. So, you know, it all boils down to being responsible for your actions.
Well, can I say something as well? Because there's so many different movements out there. I mean, of course, there's the Sovereignty Free Man, Lose the Legal Name, whatever the frick you want to call it. It actually kind of gets caught up in the minutiae sometimes, and it's basically just resistance against the legal fiction. That's basically how I define it. That's one front. And the fact of the matter is, if you approach that front, it's usually the one with the most direct consequences. And to my mind, that means it's probably one of the most effective at kind of messing with the system and keeping them on the back foot. And for some people, they have the strength of character that it takes. They have the ability to deal with the stress and the pain of having your entire life destroyed. And throughout history, there have been many, many people who have laid down their lives or simply given up their comfort or their safety in order to build a better world for others. And that's the context in which I talk about the sovereignty movement. And I've been chastised and attacked as some kind of like a shill or an idiot or something like that for even dare questioning it. And there's the other element here is that some people aren't actually in it for the greater humanity. Are some people in it for themselves? Are some people in it because they want to have like a cult-like following of people who repeat everything that they say? You know, that kind of thing. This is something I'm deeply concerned about, namely because it strikes me as sort of one of the tendencies that I have to want to, you know, be surrounded by yes men and all of that kind of thing. And I notice these problems in myself and I try to, you know, counteract them, you know, like I don't want to abuse people. I don't want to sabotage them or lie about them or criticize people without actually knowing what I'm criticizing them about. But there's many people that don't follow those same rules as I do. And they have so many blindsided followers who literally support anything that they do, even if they literally hurt other people or defame them, you know, that kind of thing. And that's just really, really dangerous. So when it comes down to it, something I heard on the United We Strike broadcast, which I'm going to, you know, remember till I die, was everybody can do something, but not everybody can do everything. In fact, nobody can do everything. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what you're resisting. So, I mean, people have asked me, Vinny, how do I resist the New World Order? It's like, bro, I don't even know you. How am I supposed to know how you can resist the New World Order? Here's a question for you. In what way is the New World Order currently messing with your life? And the answer is, well, in every single way. Well, then the answer is, if you want to resist them in any way you want. Just don't do nothing. And sitting around criticizing other people who are doing something is worse than doing nothing.
You said, if I could just chime in, it's interesting. You said, I wanted to ask, what if everybody did something at the same time? That would be quite interesting because...
Well, you try to get everybody to agree on anything at all, and I'll give you a gold star.
How many times?
That's where I think we need to go. Because, you know, what Steve said is all well and good, and I admire that he's taken that path and explored, you know, how to do that and learn the legalese and the legal speak to be able to do that, bearing in mind that the other person to whom you're talking also has to understand the law thoroughly to be able to understand what you're talking about in that aspect. But notice how many loops and hoops you have to jump through to be able to remove yourself from what essentially I see as the cancerous, controlling, corrupt Western way of ruling over us, I guess. That's what it's become. Instead of the system by which we live being for the people, it's become a controlling, ruling force dictating to us how we should be living. So how does one go about stepping out of that into a mechanism that is... for us, that has us in mind, you know, that has each other in mind. If someone mentioned that, you know, there are some basic laws which is don't harm others and cause harm, loss or duress to others. And, you know, I don't know what you think, but sometimes I wonder if perhaps the answer is going back to bases and removing ourselves.
Well,
from,
sorry.
You know, if we look at the...
I fail to see how making everybody do one thing is going back to basics. If anything, going back to basics is one person doing one thing in their own unique and amazing way and being empowered by the fact that they can do that and not need other people's help.
But, okay, I guess what I'm saying, because I'm an empath, I do care about what happens to others. And so me doing something for myself is all well and good, and it may well benefit myself. But at the same time, when I empathically look at what's happening around me, I can see that others are under a system that is making
them
unhappy.
I'm an empath too, but I realized that there were limits to it earlier on this year. Like, I had an interview with a woman named Karen, and she came around to my house, and she'd married into the family that writes the child abuse legislation in New Zealand. You know, these people with Queen's Cross medals and things like that. And, you know, and they write the legislation to protect the abusers. And they have this house that has soundproof walls and glass that they call the Candy House. You're right. And just hearing that in and of itself seems a little bit horrific. It seems kind of nasty, right? Imagine if you were in that situation with somebody who's been through this kind of thing, who's seen them doing grooming games on her child, and she doesn't stop for breath or stop talking for 6 hours straight. You know what that did to me? I wasn't able to work for 2 whole months. That is what empathy is limited by. How much of other people's trauma can you empathize with before you start to take that trauma on board and become destroyed by it? Now, this doesn't mean you shouldn't be empathetic. This means that you need to be balanced and you need to kind of maybe pick what you're really doing. I mean, can I handle this? Can I not? Is this worth my time? Is it not? Can I spend countless hours sitting around worrying about how other people feel and completely ignore myself for the vast majority of my life while my entire life is going to shambles and my family don't care about me and my job sucks and all of these other things, and yet I can't even bring myself to have any empathy for my own struggle because I'm too focused on the struggles of others that I can't even help if I tried? That's the limit.
Lisa, yeah. It looked like you had a question.
I was just thinking about Steve's case, and I was wondering, at the end of the day, I'm really impressed. And I think that, you know, if this can work, then more people will hear about it, because I've heard a lot of people come up and spout off all this, you know, good language stuff, and they're going to go up to the court, and they're going to do this, and they're going to be dismissed, and they have never done it. So Stephen's the first person that I've met that's actually done it and is here to talk about it.
It's very simple. It's very, very simple. There's nothing you can do to control the fate of what they are going to rule on that case, on that legal name. They're going to do what they want with it. It's their property. But you can prove that you are not that thing. That's it.
Right. And that's exactly what Chris would have done. You know, Chris, he would have said the same thing. But the thing is you're the only person I know that's gone up there and stayed your case and walked away. My question is, at the end of the day, did they, you know, slam the gauntlet down and say dismissed and you walked out of there, or they pronounced your straw man guilty? And
I don't care what they did.
Right.
I don't care.
I know someone that's in the same boat as you, I think, Steve. They took over an abandoned building.
It's their game, and I told them I'm not playing it. And I told them exactly how, in a way that they know that I know. And anything they want to try and do to me, they can't touch me. They just can't touch me that way.
Really? Right, well, hold on a second, because there's another element here to the sovereignty thing that I think is being ignored, is the fact that the authorities don't even follow their own rules. Even when they have to. I mean, are you telling me that the governments of the world and the courts and everything actually follow their own rules to the letter, and they don't violate things and totally mess people around and do illegal stuff? Have they you know, because if that was the case, then why would anybody be upset about it in the first place? I've always wondered about the irony of going up against people who follow no rules and trying to use their own rules that they don't even follow against them.
Good point.
Hugh Grant of Monsanto comes right to mind on that, Vincent.
Yes, know? It does.
You got a couple of lawyers up your sleeves? I'll walk over to St. Louis right now.
Well, I think that this is the other thing. It's like people have been talking about like going quote-unquote off-grid, and I was like thinking about the NDAA. So it's now legal to, what, drone strike somebody anywhere in the world that has U.S. citizenship without a warrant, without a trial, and they've got like satellites that can read your biometric fingerprint from space and send a Hellfire missile to one unlucky guy somewhere around the world and shove a missile right down his throat, and people think they can still go off grid. You know, it's almost like people have decided that there's an out, right? And I think this is a mistake. I don't think there is an out. I don't think there is a remedy. Personally, my belief is that we're all screwed and we're all going to die, right? And there's no hope. Now, I've gotten used to that idea, and the reason why I have is because I cannot be disappointed at any point in my life if that's my baseline principle assumption. If I go out there with a megaphone, my assumption being I'll be arrested and I'll be taken to jail and there'll be some kind of scumbag to attack me, whatever, and then nothing happens and people have a few laughs on the protest and I have a conversation with one person or two people and teach them something they didn't previously know and trigger a research fever in them to actually go out and investigate things, that's a success. It's kind of like the key to happiness is really, really low expectations. And my wife's brother, a very, very deep believer in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, asked me, Vinny, why do you keep doing this if you don't think we're going to win? And I say, well, basically, it's moral obligation. It doesn't matter whether or not we're going to win or... It doesn't matter whether or not we're going to win or whether victory is near. What matters is that you do the right thing because it's the right thing, not because it's easy.
You know what I would have said in that circumstance, if we're talking about somebody who is deeply religious like that, right? Tell them, well, what do you think was going through the Christ's mind when he was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane? He was sweating blood during that prayer session, according to their word.
Okay, is there a point to that?
The point is that the sacrifice, right? You know, you're doing the right thing despite all odds, and you're doing the right thing knowing very well that your fate could be the ultimate fate. And the whole point is that if you're familiar with scripture, the Garden of Gethsemane is where Jesus was arrested. He was praying. He was having a last minute prayer with God to say, is this it? Is this the way? You know, is this my fate? Is this the path I have to take? Because I really don't want it. I will do
can
it.
Can I interject? Because a listener, I sent out a big email. I spent like a long time actually going through my old PayPal emails looking for people that have donated to me in the past so I can send out an email asking for support in my time in need kind of thing. And one of them emails me back and says, Vinny, do you believe in God? Have you prayed about this? I can assure you prayers work. And I said, yes, I do believe in God. Yes, I do believe in Jesus. But I don't pray for them when there's something that I want. I only pray to them when I've got it good and I want my life to turn bad. I go, Jesus, please mess up my life. Please destroy some stuff that's making me feel too comfortable because I'm actually not suffering enough. And I find then my prayers get answered, you know, pretty instantaneously. Like, bam, you know, God was listening to me. And there's a reason I do this is because it's about suffering, pain and sacrifice. If anybody else thinks that they can do the Lord's work and not live a life of eternal suffering and pain, then you ain't doing the Lord's work.
I've got so many comments on that, it's ridiculous. But
I've got one too.
Going to go ahead and turn over the floor to Wally because he's been awfully quiet.
Well, God, I was just before you, Vinny, I had a comment on, oh, you know, just like you said, Steve, the Christ was praying. That was one man doing one thing. You know, that's what came to mind when you were talking, you know, as we were talking earlier, if everybody did one thing.
Right.
And he knew the outcome, and that was his one thing that he was going to do for that outcome. And I had it all out, and then Vinny, you started talking, and it kind of threw me off. But it was, I wanted to get the point out of the one man doing one thing. He was one, and he did, as far as I feel, he did a great thing.
Right. That actually reminds me of a conversation I had last night with a whole bunch of activists at this birthday party. And we said that when it comes to any particular issue, whether that be local council corruption or water privatization or something like that, everybody looks to the masses and they say, oh, the masses have to solve this and we all need to come together. And me and a very experienced activist, Lisa Prager, who was one of the integral people behind the anti-nuclear protests back in New Zealand during the 80s, she and I both agreed that it doesn't come down to the masses. In fact, most cases, it comes down to the one. There is one person in that situation who knows what's going on, has the charisma and the dedication and the wherewithal to see it through to its end. And that's basically what I look for when I look for people to interview on my shows. Is this person the one for their particular issue? I came up with this theory called the tactic of the cactus. And a cactus, as we all know, protects itself in spines. It covers itself in so that in every single direction, there's spines jutting out. So anything that wants to step on it will get a little prick to remind it. And conspiracy and scumbaggery is being resisted in much the same way by humanity. For every single conspiracy, for every town, city, family, there is one person for whom that is their issue, for whom they have the strength and the power to actually make a difference in that time and place. The only question is whether or not they want to take responsibility and fulfill their role as one of the many spines that protect our global cactus.
I do agree with what you said there just now. However, because of the nature of the species, we are social and we are entangled. It's like, yes, what one, it always often starts with one individual, and we've seen that throughout history, where certain individuals like Luther King and Gandhi, it started with them, and they created them, you know, the incentive and the mass and the information to motivate others. So I do see what you're saying, and yes, there is the individual to look out for in the environment. But I guess my frustration at the moment is that it's all the avenues of change that exist out there are very slow and cumbersome, and purposely made that way, I feel. So, you know, it is often an uphill struggle for an individual to affect some sort of change. And at the end of the day, a lot of the time to affect that change, they have to get others around their cause. They have to petition and then petition, you know, present that petition to someone else and kind of appeal for that change and hope that the individual that they're appealing to, an authority, understands their point of view, a kind of lobbying, if you like.
That's true enough, but how many wars have been stopped because a couple of people passed around a petition? I mean, did the elite go, oh my God, we've got the biggest stockpile of nuclear weapons and armaments and banking cartel money that anybody has ever had in the entirety of history, but oh my God, these people have got signatures on a piece of paper. Whatever will we do?
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't quite. In fact, everyone was, you know, we had millions protests against the Iraq war here in the UK when it happened. So, you know, everyone was totally against it.
But see, I guess, and that's the thing. The protests and those mass things don't seem to make a difference. And it's disempowered me and disenchanted me with the act of mass action. And so the point of mass action for me now isn't actually making a difference. The point of participating in mass actions, whether they be protests or petitions or whatever, is just for the fun of it, really, because ultimately I know that that's the most I'm going to get out of it. And I don't expect too much. I expect more of myself. And this is the difference between people who actually change things and people like politicians who change things. Because when the politician comes out and they say, we want to change this, we want to change that, and sacrifices are going to have to be made, they're not talking about self-sacrifice. They're talking about sacrificing your liberties, your country, your future, the future of your children. When an activist who has been working for years tirelessly with very little funding, very little public support, actually gets an issue done, they get it done purely out of self-sacrifice. And I believe that this is actually the most powerful thing that a human being can muster up, is the willingness to sacrifice what you value for something greater.
I agree, and that's why I personally won't go off the grid for that reason, because I want to have an impact. I want to leave a legacy. You know, I am me, but I am also that which I leave behind: my children, my children's children, my art, my words, you know. So, and I realize, and I want to manifest that as much as I can. If I can mention an analogy, there's a film called Finding Nemo. You might have seen it. And someone mentioned Admiralty Law. As I see it, it's like we're in a ship, and that around that ship is Admiralty Law. And supposedly we lost at sea, and this is part of the law. We're supposedly lost at sea, and we are found and are berthed, you know, by the authorities, by the captain, if you want to call it that, of the ship. And just as in that, using that same analogy, in Finding Nemo, there's a school of fish, and they're caught up in a net attached to a ship above, and they can't escape the net. Just like we're caught in a net, you know, by the control mechanisms that exist around us. Now, the only way they can escape that net is if they all pull together at the same time, and they do that, and they suddenly, you know, it's push, you know, or pull in that case, and they all swim in the same direction to put the stress on the boat, and they break and escape the net. And I feel that is the only way we can allow ourselves, both individually and collectively, to realize our own callings, to manifest our own desires, to explore the information that we have learned, the information that exists out there, to manifest something much greater, something much more evolutionary, a renaissance of spirit and desire and culture. And until we do that, then what's going to happen is that, yes, there will be people that are going to be stemming the flow of corruption and the cancerous incentive that exists from on high within the establishment, and this is stemming some of the flow, but then there are other kind of cracks in the infrastructure that are affecting the lives of others and causing pain and suffering and war and duress and poverty and so on and so forth. So I think that something does need to happen at the same time, and I think the sooner we can work out collectively what it is we need to do at the same time to remove ourselves from a control system that is not acting in our interest, then the better.
I also wanted to say that if you want to empower yourself, sometimes you just need to change something, right? And I found, basically earlier on, I watched a whole bunch of documentaries. I think I was watching about 2 documentaries a day, minimum, for about 6 months. You try doing that and try keeping the same state of mind after it. It's just not possible, because you start to learn at a geometric rate in detail about a wide range of different topics. And what that helped me to realize is that I can make a difference, but I can only make a difference in something that I want to do, something that I'm passionate about, and something that nobody else has done yet. And at the time, I was listening to a lot of Alex Jones, and I like the idea of going out there and getting in the people's faces and making videos and radio, and that's what I do today. However, I don't do it in the same style, not even close to how Alex Jones does it. Initially, I did, but after you go out there and you start changing things, like actually taking action, you start to find your own feet. You start to find your own style. And you realize that when you put people up on a pedestal, eventually they will come tumbling down from that pedestal. And guess who gets crushed when they come tumbling down? You, the silly bastard who put them up there. And what this made me realize is that you can do things without needing any help, at least to start with. I didn't need any help to go out and start filming protests and public meetings and things like that and helping the activists get their voices out, because this is the initial intention, was to create the sort of mass alternative media very similar to the InfoWars model in New Zealand and make it relevant to Kiwis, but also be able to have access to the American audience, do lots of international interviews. And I have made an enormous impact globally because I didn't go, oh, can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? I just went out and just did it. And the reason I did that is because, ironically, somebody helped me by giving me a little bit of advice. I was drunk at a party, you know, as you do, and going to these two guys and asked them what they did for a living, and they said, we do green screening for movies. And I go, wow, that's amazing. I really want to get into the movie industry. Can you help me? And they're like, nah, just do it. And I did. And it's probably the best advice that anybody could ever really get. Just do it. If you've got an idea, if you've got a passion, if you really want to do something, don't sit around waiting for the opportune moment, because you are never going to feel like it. All right, that's the thing we have to learn as adults, is that we're never going to feel like it, and we have to be our own parents. You have to kind of, when you're 18, okay, I'm now my own parent. I have to clean myself. I have to go to bed on time. I have to get the dishes done. I have to pay those bills and all of that kind of stuff. You basically have to be your own parent. And if you don't force yourself to do those things that you really even don't even feel like doing at the time, you're not really being a responsible adult. You're attached to comfort. And I think comfort is the thing that kills our ability to act, and trauma is the thing that catalyzes us into action, which is why I crave trauma. And as I mentioned before, if I'm feeling too good or if I got it too easy, that's the only time when I actually pray to God to mess up my life.
You know, there is a house of cards, and only they're super glued together. And the house of cards is the establishment, and it's infiltrated every part of our society through law, through corporations, through education, through medicine, and policing, you name it. Now, I think the only way we can... And it's not serving our interests. It's not serving our interests. And I think as a matter of urgency, before we become... I mean, the other thing I wanted to mention is desensitization. We're systematically becoming exposed to more and more trauma, more and more observation of the how bad this house of cards has been operating, how bad they've been, you know, they've been using us. In a form of slavery, in a form of control, you know, abusing us for their own purposes and means and their own gain. Now, I think an individual can only take on board so much of that because it is traumatic. But again, we're being hit with all these images. We're being hit through video games, all this violence, you know, it's nonstop. It's nonstop trauma, you know, and we are becoming more and more desensitized. And I think if we don't act soon, to pull in the same direction, to destabilize the house of cards, you know, then we're going to become so desensitized to the needs of others that it will be too late. So I do see as a matter of urgency that this is urgent, and I think collectively that we need to work out how do we pull at the same time to bring down the House of Cards and introduce our own desires, individual and collective.
Well, I find it ironic that you keep talking about individual and collective, but the things that you're talking about are actually only the collective. You're talking about coming together to with groups of people to accomplish big goals and things like that. And I think the opposite approach is actually what works. What am I going to do that will make people sit up and take notice and change what they're doing and then act collectively behind me? I mean, you may not realize this, but there's always somebody leading groups of people, right? Have you ever noticed that? Did everybody come to Occupy Movement via osmosis, or were there people there that were running the campsites and organizing things and scheduling speeches and protests and things of that nature? There's always somebody working their butt off, and what I've found is it's the people who work behind the scenes, right? The people who actually seem to be doing the jobs that are of not much value, who are actually the most valuable. I had somebody commenting on my Facebook the other day about how they're a hardcore truther. And I said, okay, well, what do you do? What quantifies a hardcore truther? Because none of the people that I consider to be hardcore truthers refer to themselves as hardcore truthers. And this person admitted that they actually don't do anything. They sit on Facebook and they share other people's content and things like that. And I could insult him, and I guess I kind of did in a way, but I was trying to make a point. I said, so you're a keyboard truther, are you? Well, that's nothing to be ashamed of. Let's think about this. Think about every war that's ever been fought. Do you think that any side that won would have won if they didn't have people standing in the base camp, nurses, doctors, surgeons, planners, people who are cooking the meals for the troops, people who are washing the socks and what have you. If there weren't any of those people doing those little jobs in the background, how long do you think the soldiers on the front line would survive? You know, and I think about the truth context is like the people on the radio, the people doing the videos in the media sense of the word are sort of like those backline people. Okay, people think we're at the forefront. No, we're just not. Okay, we're not the ones who are going through all the government documents, who are writing the submissions to the Crown or the government entities, etc. We're not the ones who are actually writing the new legislation that will replace the old bad legislation. There's activists and really good people who do a lot of work, then they don't get the recognition for it because people on radio, like myself, seem to like soak up all the attention. And I don't think that's fair. And that's why when I'm interviewing people, I try to shut up basically as much as I can on my own radio show, unlike what I'm doing now, of course, but just to let them speak. Because in my opinion, it's the people who do one thing by themselves that actually makes the biggest impact and the biggest difference. And I think the reason why they're not making quite as enough of an impact or quite enough of a difference to satisfy all the rest of us is because we haven't made listening to them and supporting them a priority in our own life.
I'm going to jump in here for a moment. This is the Second Foundation. Seth Michaels will be back before too much longer. In the meantime, we're covering for him. I want to thank all our wonderful guests. I want to get everybody to tell us their websites or shows. I know, Steve Travesty, you do Ghost in the Machine, and you produce Sean David Morkin. Why don't you start, Steve?
Yes, yes. Sean David Morkin.
I'm sorry, it's late at night.
It's all right.
Morton, Sean David Morton. Morton, like the salt.
Yes, Morton salt. Oh, man. So, yeah, no. Yeah, that's right. I'm Steve Travesty. I'm a host here. I have Ghost in the Machine, which is on twice a week, Mondays 2 to 4 Eastern Time and Tuesdays 8 to 10 Eastern Time. I have a roundtable midnight to 2 a.m. And I produce Sean Mondays through Fridays from 6 to 8. And that's about the extent of my work. And then, you know, from time to time, I drop into conversations like this one here.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. You do so much work on the station. People don't realize you produce Sean and do your own show. I don't know, what is it, 20 hours a week you do or something like that?
Yeah, I guess that's what it comes out to, because it's definitely 10 for Sean, and then there's three more, so that's like 16.
Excellent. Yep. Vincent. Vinny.
Yeah.
My friend. Tell us about your show.
Okay, it's The Vinny Eastwood Show, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. It's a listener-supported broadcast, and I'm kind of... broadcast as often as I can, really, just uploading archives to there, as well as, of course, doing YouTube videos and going out filming speakers, lectures, and editing them together for people, because ultimately a lot of the people who have enough information to make a lecture and a slideshow out of it usually don't have enough money to pay a professional videographer to do it. So I trained myself to be a professional videographer, and I get funded by listeners. And basically, that's what people's donations pay for. They pay for my roof and food, just so that I can spend every waking minute of my life helping people that know the issues better than I do, so that they can inform you, the listener. So if you want to support me, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribe to my new YouTube channel, other than the one that's been deleted. I'm going to hopefully try and get that back. I'm not sure about the rate of success there, but it's Eastwood Vincent, and you can search me on YouTube, Vinny Eastwood, just Vinny with a Y. And other than that, thanks for having me on the broadcast today, bro. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, my friend. And we have Wally Ladd, who I think is probably going to drop off, and Lisa as well at the top of the hour. Thank you both so much for joining us, and of course you're welcome to stay. I am going to do two more hours. And Wingman as well, thank you, my friend. It's so nice to hear from you. We've got Vinny in New Zealand. Steve, I think you're in Connecticut, is that correct?
Yep, that state they call Connecticut.
And Wally, you're in Michigan, is that correct?
The water wonderland. The winter water wonderland.
And Lisa, where are you at? What city or state?
I'm in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia.
Excellent. And Wingman, you're near London, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, not far from London.
It's a very eclectic group of guests here tonight, my friends.
I agree. I've really enjoyed this roundtable. Vinny, it was really a pleasure meeting you. I look forward to our days at Revolution Radio together.
You might want to invite me on your show, eh?
You'll be on, don't worry about it. I don't have a show, but I produce, and you'll be seeing me around. I'm sure we'll be seeing you around too, because you fit right in. Yeah. Wingman, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Steve, thanks for giving me the update on the court case. I appreciate it. Keith, you're the man. Rock on for two more hours, bro. You guys, good night.
Good night, my friend.
Nice meeting you, Vibes.
Take care.
Night, good night.
You want out?
Good night.